Radiohead from Amnesiac. Almost 20 years old. Does not seem old at all. When I first heard that song, I saw it live at an amphitheater in the Seattle area. I was new to Radiohead. I'd only ever heard Hail to the Thief, the album that was contemporary at that moment, and my friend Stephanie invited me to the show, and I guess this was around maybe 2004, and I saw that song live for the first time, and I was not familiar with this entity known as Thom Yorke. I had missed the whole thing on Radiohead until Hail to the Thief came out and kind of saved my soul in those years. The first song, by the way, was from Hail to the Thief. And he was getting in the face of the camera. It was a camera kind of on the stage and in front of him, and that was broadcasting to the monitors that the audience could see, and I'm sure being recorded for posterity. I guess Radiohead has an entire video van that follows them, and I don't know quite the word. Take sarcastic and triple it. Getting in the face of whoever it was he was talking to, you and whose army? Are you going to take us all? Now, we're in a little problem right now, owing to the fact that our lives are so stitched into the disembodied internet. And that until somebody places an ankle bracelet around you, you are voluntarily walking around with your IP address, that being your telephone or other smart device that's permanently connected to the internet. And there are laws pending right now that are making this into more of an instrument of tyranny than it already is. Our research has advanced to the point where we are starting to be deeply troubled by certain topics, one of which is the combined takeover, as one of my researchers put it, of World Health Organization, John Hopkins, all the players from Event 201, the dress rehearsal for this that took place in October, which got it down to the T, funded by Bill Gates, organized by Gates Foundation, along with big tech and telecom, coordinated by the FCC, the Democrats doing things like introducing things like HR 6666, huge amounts of money changing hands, the dollar being printed so fast that it's amazing that it buys anything, and then amazing that anybody has any of them, given all that's happened. I'm going to say this as calmly and as lovingly as I can. We need to wake up, pay attention, and actually fulfill our function. I could say we need to wake up and pay attention and see and feel the beauty around us and the beauty of this transient experience that we are blessed to live with, for this moment to be with. I got a letter the other day from someone who said, what about a commentary on sex and COVID? Well, that's a good idea. I've thought of it a bit, not being entirely sure where to kind of enter the discussion of sex and COVID, I have been talking about sexual healing process the entire time that COVID has been in the news. It's been one Tantra studio after the next focused on sexual healing. And finally, when I wrote my kind of big piece about Venus retrograde a couple of weeks ago, and the involvement with Vesta, my thought was and is, okay, if all discussion of sex has to be in the context of healing for a while, so be it. We need that. We need that. I know we need that, partly because of how many of my clients have told me about the things that they've experienced and how much I've learned to, use the astrological reading as a forum for gaining understanding and self-understanding and self-compassion and a holistic view of sexuality. On one level, it would be beautiful. I might do it, possibly not today, but let's at least state the idea. To talk about the role that sex plays in the genome. Because on one level, when people have sex and a baby is created, there is this genetic miracle that happens of an entirely unique entity being created by the combination of the DNA of the parents. And so one of the things that humans do is they recombine DNA as part of their reproductive process. There's a book I've mentioned a few times called Sex and the Origins of Death, which talks about how this miracle of sexual reproduction and the shuffling of the genetic code every time a new being is created, any being that reproduces sexually, whether it's your kitty cat or your dog or your turtle or many different plants or people and every other critter crawling around, we have this capacity to reproduce sexually, which we get at the expense of immortality. So physical immortality is possible, but it is only possible, according to Sex and the Origins of Death, which is a study in the genetics of all of this, in entities that don't reproduce sexually. So things that clone, for example, do not reproduce sexually, and they can be immortal. There is an immortal entity called the HeLa, H-E-L-A, Henrietta Lacks, the cell line, which we've been researching as part of our investigation of cell line contamination. The HeLa cell line came out of a cervical cancer tumor in a woman from down south named Henrietta Lacks at some point, maybe in the 50s. And these cells are immortal. There's something in the cell that turns off, I always draw a blank on this word, and I looked it up and I posted it, the definition to Facebook, and I'm going to scroll down my timeline right now. I've dared to open up a browser while I'm speaking to you and get the name of this process. I've been posting a lot, haven't I? So I have a very exciting Facebook timeline where I moderate a civilized adult discussion of adult issues. It's the EFC 1964 one. I think it's the best Facebook feed I've ever seen because the topics are all relevant, and I encourage my Facebook friends, many of whom are my personal friends, some of whom you don't know who they are, maybe till we start clowning around, but some people I've known 30, 35 years are on my Facebook page. Okay, now that I found it, apoptosis, A-P-O-P-T-O-S-I-S, is the program in cells to die. HeLa cells, cut from the HPV-16 infected cervical cancer of Henrietta Lacks, are immortal. Apoptosis is turned off. And these things have been bred to the tune of tons, and they don't reproduce sexually. We do. And as a consequence of that, we also get death. And so there's some profound relationship between sex and death that goes beyond the merely poetic and the French word for orgasm being little death and all this. That's not exactly what I have to say about sex and the topic of the COVID thing and the global pandemic. I think what I think of the most when I consider this is the effect of the profound instilling of paranoia into people about social contact. How something of our trust in our biology, our trust in our ability to be harmless to one another, to be helpful to one another, has been shaken by this idea that the only safe place in the entire world is alone in your room in front of a screen. This is an extension of the disembodiment issue that we've talked about so many times throughout the whole Planet Waves portfolio of presentations, that the technological realm, the electrical realm, is pushing us into disembodiment, dehumanization, becoming like robots, and now we're expected to be robots and expect for Bill Gates, of all people, to come up with a correction in our programming called the COVID-19 immunization, which personally makes me want to throw up, and maybe an electrostatic vaccine that comes with a little zap. That'll be great for everyone's chakra system, which is already enough out of balance on average. And so I think that, at least it's my observation, that this whole situation and all of the fear associated with it are going to serve as disembodying influences, and influences that destroy trust until we consciously take over the process and say, that is not going to be that. I'm going to choose to do something else with my ability to love and to trust and to experience beauty. To not cooperate with this one agenda and instead to choose another agenda. The agenda of contact with each other. I can't, except for the one person I get to hug a lot, can't remember when the last time I hugged somebody was. I'm glad I've got a companion hanging out with me and dogs, my own and every other dog I meet. So I get some good social contact and some physical contact with them, but the hugging has stopped. I used to have a lot of hugging in my life. And now people are like tapping elbows, maybe, and looking at each other with suspicion and hostility over their mask. We have a mask problem without the face mask, without these hideous N95s and bandanas and these black things that people are wearing because it's, I guess, maybe cooler. And we already have a problem with society essentially being a bunch of people wearing masks. And so now, I don't know how long this is going to go on for. People are going to wear masks, and lots of them will, and you cannot see all these important facial features that are vital to communication. One of the things that masks are doing is blocking nonverbal communication. We navigate the emotional realm through nonverbal communication. So that troubles me. The disembodiment troubles me. The fear level troubles me. The the overall sense of alienation is something we need to monitor. And I'm concerned how fast this happened. And it almost seems like every time the world is ready to take a step in a positive direction, there's some new shock doctrine event, almost always a false flag event, which this now fully qualifies as. When we're told that there's going to be millions or tens of millions of deaths, and everyone gets in line, and then that turns out to not be true, and then everyone's still in line, that's a false flag event. So we need a way out of this, and not everyone is going to be interested in a way out of this. And so I think that we need to find each other. People who essentially choose to remain human, which means choose to remain physical and choose to experience beauty and love and choose to want to be social and understand that to be sexual is just an extension of that or maybe an element of that. The choice to be human, to experience our full humanity and to consciously share and participate in one another's lives now becomes, for those who want this, and there are many people who don't want this and for whom this is the perfect opportunity to be less loving and less social and to hide their face and to stay apart from one another, to, if this techno shit goes, to visit anyone's home to ultimately be a thing that can get them arrested. You go to a party, a bunch of cell phones are together at the party. Whose house was the party at? Someone has come up COVID positive, which is utterly meaningless. Now suddenly everyone's a suspect. This is the best science fiction plot ever written. If you like the dystopian type of science fiction. How would I rewrite this? Well, The rewrite is that this thing happens as it's happened, right? All the threats, the death threats, and the one of my favorite lines in A Course in Miracles is, accept no compromise in which death plays a part. Now, remember, A Course in Miracles is a course in miracles. It's not a course in being enlightened. It's not a course in seeming enlightened. It's not a course in being smarty pants. It's a course in miracles. And in the course in miracles, it says, accept no compromise in which death plays a part. Oops, a lot of people have accepted a compromise in which death plays a part. Plays a part, any part, check it. If you're being asked to make a compromise, ask yourself if death plays a part in the compromise. What we have seen, and in many ways are seeing, because this is not over as a political event, it's likely to burn out as a medical event in a natural way, because we just absorb it, and the virus weakens, and we're evaluating all the ones that are saying it's getting worse and affects all these other organs and all this stuff. Keep that aside for the moment. So in the midst of this terror and fear and distancing and isolation, the revolutionary act is to be together. Offline, off the grid, to be together. To meet, and everyone leaves their phone at home, so there's no possible contact tracing. There's no possible use of data, apps, and metadata to say, oh, that person was together with that person in that place in that time. And that the revolution comes in step by step. Well, the revolution comes in, or the evolution, you might say, comes in, we need to preserve our humanity. We're going to preserve our humanity by being human. Just doing the basic things. Get together and eat together in no fear. Just gratitude for one another's presence. There's a lot of people who are never going to experience that again. Maybe they didn't experience it before. Maybe they really didn't know what it meant to be in a relaxed and loving space, just grateful for the company of their friends. And I really would wish everyone who hasn't had that could have that missing experience. But there are a lot of people who are never going to have it again, and a lot of children who are going to be suspicious of anyone they meet because this happened at a certain formative time in their lives. And the revolutionary act is to be human, off the grid, off the computers, in one another's presence, eating food that we made, and having sex that has nothing to do with machines or the kind of fantasy meme machine of the internet, which is going to be psychological and biological critters. This is, far as I'm concerned, going to be a real thing in my life. I'm not going to treat my friends and lovers as potentially contagious biological specimens. I mean, this is also coming from the person who goes around collecting dog spit, because I make out with every dog. And I figured out after a while that making out with every dog is really good for my immune system, because I'm exchanging in what Dr. Bush said was the single best way of gene expression, gene circulation, is dogs are the number one thing. So I'm like, come here. And nibble each other. So I don't have a thing where I'm disgusted. But the sex realm is already badly contaminated with the mind virus of, is this person in some way sick? Does this person have herpes? Does this person have HPV? Does this person have AIDS? Does this person have hepatitis? When was the last time you got tested? Contact tracing. Who have you had sex with? So we've already got this issue going in the realm of sexuality and relationships, and everyone has their way of addressing it. Everyone has their way of dealing with it. But now we really have to confront this, because there's been an idea introduced that it's not unprotected sex that could possibly kill someone or render them, a marked person with like herpes simplex type 2, but rather merely breathing at the same dinner table. Wall Street Journal had a picture of two people having lunch together with a glass divider between them. Really? A glass divider between two people having lunch? This is pure dystopian insanity. We are constantly sharing the air that we breathe. And now we know the viruses can appear in the Sahara Desert and the Arctic Circle at the same time. We must get over ourselves. But I'm a little off my point, but just a little. The rewrite to this is that we actually dare to get together and be loving and human and tribal in the best sense of that concept. That we do this thing that humans do, which is hang out and be with each other. And it almost seems as if society is going to bifurcate into the really paranoid and afraid people who see and think and hear and feel virus everywhere. And people who understand that when we kiss, I get some of your DNA into my body and it never leaves. And you get some of my DNA into your body and it never leaves. And that's a beautiful thing. And when I kiss you, I kiss everybody you ever kissed. And when you kiss me, you kissed everybody that I ever kissed. So I think that out of this, we have the ability to define a new idea, a new concept of what it means to be sexual, what it means to be social, and to set this in a larger context of respect for respect for taking care of ourselves and one another. We're not wearing masks in my office. I'm just aware of how everyone is taking care of themselves, and I make sure that everyone has enough money to take care of themselves and enough supplies to take care of themselves, and that anybody who comes in my house is fed and has whatever from my supply closet that they need, or from our information database that we need, which includes how to take care of each other and how to take care of ourselves. This has to be the rehumanized idea of what sex is about. And you could say, well, it's not just sex, but no, it's not just sex. Sex is not just sex. And everything that isn't sex is not sex. Sex is part of everything, like the virome and the microbiome and the biome are part of everything. And that we have this human urge that we need to be with, to be recombining our DNA as a privilege of being these fleeting mortal beings who we are, with this brief interval where we actually can do this and choose to do it in a loving way. And just to kind of tie this up in a way that has an immediate reality to it, the Venus retrograde in Gemini is about reconciling with ourselves. Part of reconciling with ourselves means settling all of these differences that we have with ourselves, so many of which have been imparted to us and like zapped into us by past injuries. So to be able to relate to each other in this friendly, loving, present way, we also need to resolve and not bring the baggage in to the situations, or to commit to resolving and then enter our relationship situations with an understanding that we're learning to let go of this baggage from the past and not blame your current boyfriend on what your first boyfriend 10 boyfriends ago did to you, and you still have that anger, you know, over and over again, or what your father did, and then that's getting, then your current partner is blamed, your mother did, your current partner is getting blamed. We need to work in the psychic environment and the emotional environment to have sufficient clear resonance with each other to be able to do this. And that's ultimately about reconciling with ourselves. And what a perfect metaphor for Venus retrograde in Gemini. Now, it is square Neptune. And my take on the square to Neptune, right? Venus is in a long square to Neptune. It's lasting like a month. So we're really having the point emphasized is about distinguishing fantasy from reality, to know which mode you're in. There's a central tantric teaching that fantasy is a dangerous thing. Now, as an artist, many instances, erotic artist and writer, I wonder if that's also not included in fantasy. So what I just strive to do is make my art as real as I can make it, and to be with and be loving toward my sexual fantasies and not feel any guilt about them. That said, there are a lot of people who unconsciously bring their fantasy life into their relationships and don't call that out. Right? They're living it, but not saying, hey, let's do this as a conscious exploration of a fantasy. That is my take on the square to Neptune, is the reconciling with oneself and also learning the distinction between fantasy and reality as part of that. Finally, Venus is in a conjunction to a centaur called Aspolus, the fourth centaur. Aspolus is about what all life has in common. And I think that when we approach our sexuality, it is vital and nourishing and healing and reassuring to remember that this is what all life, as we experience it, has in common. Now, I mean, my spider plants send off shoots and I can clone an infinite number of them without really doing too much work, and it's wonderful, and they're all the same being. Okay, my fellow humans, dogs and cats and guppies, and the birds and the bees, reproduce sexually. Aspolus, carbon dust, that which all life has in common. There's a lot of beautiful things which all life has in common. I love seeing the things that I have in common with cats and dogs and with every little critter that moves, and the beautiful little distinctive ways that their behavior mirrors mine and mine mirrors theirs. And this is what we get to do. And all that mirroring, Venus retrograde in Gemini, be a good time to be the fully self-realized mirror masturbator. See what that's like. It's a trip. It's not normally the kind of thing you talk about, but it can be the kind of thing that you say, hey, let's do this. Let's give this a try. Alone or together for an unusual experience of sexual self-realization. On that note, I leave you with another bit of Radiohead, a band so good I sometimes can't even believe that they exist. But I'm very happy that they do. And this is from A Moon-Shaped Pool. Back with you again soon. Thanks for listening. And lots of love. And bye for now.
Storm clouds gather while I muse over the weather, and miss the message while I read between the lies. Like thunder calling the forces of friendship together, on the dark side of the dream, I dreamed I was alive. These hills seem to swirl beneath the cloudbursts and the satiny drapes. My mind tips against the world of wishes, sounds, and sights. It turns from the power of the hearth that churns white hot faith. The night deepens. I fly into the fear and know I will escape. Dear Urbana, though I cannot see, your faces flash in lights across my fields of vision. The music of your voices dances through my heart's cradles, out in circles from one gentle splash. Hour by hour we draw cards in the swell of evening, trace the moments of a dark street with our fingers interlaced. There was never one sorrow that did not leave me believing. Never a dream that was ever replaced. I say about all the minutes of those days, the miles of those journeys, the states of mind and the games of solitaire, fast abandoning tabs on the lost and the retrieved as time thunders laughing across the thresholds of the years. I had tumbled back into some new gape of the ancient dream, deceived in believing I was deceived, desiring for the prison of want, searching for some gender between the oppressed and the oppressor. Then stream with a great perk of bile from the labyrinth that was never there. You have come close to truth, and only this stands between you and the bridge that leads you to it. I opened my eyes, my rib was returned. Hope is a hard love to part for the hopeful. And then met with the vision of this precipitous beginning, a child in my arms, tame and wild cats all around me. Now, said the voice, step out lightly, but I could not see the crossing. Vision can deceive, and so I learned to listen. basking as I am in the light of the invisible sun.